Think of a song you really love.
Don't you want to know why you love it so much?
Well, we can't answer that.
No, but we can deep dive into it anyway.
Unless we get too sidetracked.
We're the Never Mind the Music podcast.
One musician.
And one psychologist.
Talking about iconic songs. The musical tricks that blow our minds.
And what they show us about our minds.
Join us each week as we pick apart everything from TLC to Weezer.
And from Billie Eilish to Bruno Mars, with plenty of distractions in between.
Check out Never Mind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You usually don't see all those notes together.
No.
It's just a lot of sound, right?
How do you even play that on a piano? You don't have 13 fingers.
You only need 7, though. 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. Some people, by the way, might have 13 fingers.
Sure.
I think it's rude of you to presume too much.
Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And you're listening to Never Mind the Music.
Nicole, I would love to talk about Spandau Ballet.
Spandau Ballet. Very fun name to say.
I know this much is true.
The song makes me think of like a middle school dance, arm's length with your crush.
I think it's supposed to, and it's been used in so many movies. This song's just sort of iconic one-hit wonder from the 80s, right?
Sure.
So this is Spandau Ballet. Spandau Ballet. Spandau Ballet. That is really hard to say. It's a weird name.
It's a super weird name.
Do you know? Did you look up what it means?
No, I was thinking it was like a riff on spandex, kind of.
I don't think so.
That can't
be
right.
Apparently, they saw it scribbled on a bathroom stall. Famously not good place to get your band name. But it either means one or both of these things. It either refers to the twitching of bodies as they're shot by a World War I era German gun.
Oh my gosh. It's very specific.
The MG08. Or it refers to the twitching of Nazis being hanged in Spandau prison at the end of World War II. So let's name our synth pop new wave band Spandau Ballet, right?
And wild. Like, inspire middle school dances for generations.
Exactly. So this song, of course, is True from the 1983 album True. This song hit number 4. They had a couple other songs back then that charted, Gold, Only When You Leave, but I would say both those songs are forgotten when compared to this song. This is the song people know this band for.
This is the moneymaker.
I mean, I think this is one of those songs that people know, but they don't even necessarily know the name of the band. Right.
That's where I was at.
Right.
For sure.
So did you watch the video for this one?
Oh, I sure did.
It's pretty low budget, I would say. Right.
It is like, I think when they thought of like the term low budget, they had this video in mind.
This is in the dictionary.
This is it.
Yeah. But I think this is a part of that second British invasion, as they call it, where in the early days of MTV, British synth pop, the so-called new romantics style.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the MTV content were these British bands because they had videos at all. Like in the early 80s, American artists just weren't really making videos yet. And so you get these guys playing in some kind of an empty club videos that were filler. And so I think that helped bands like this get hits, even though when you compare it to what happened just shortly after with Thriller, for example, the production value is not even close.
Sure. So they just like had the content.
Right. There was content to air.
Yeah.
Exactly. The British. So this song is written by guitarist Gary Kemp. Because he became infatuated with Claire Grogan, who's the lead vocalist of the band Altered Images. I don't know if you know them. So he wrote this song in honor of her after listening to a bunch of Marvin Gaye and Al Green.
Okay. I can like definitely see that connection.
And that's where I'm going here.
Okay,
so this
cool.
song is this mishmash of this guy's obsession with this woman he probably barely knows at the time, who he's drawing from all of this really romantic, sexy music from the previous 10 or 15 years. But it's like this cocktail because what's the most famous part of the song, right?
Not the sax solo.
It's not the sax solo, though That's a good sax solo.
It is.
A good classic 80s.
Hot.
But it's this part. And he apparently was inspired by the Beatles' I Dig a Pony. Do you know that song?
Play it for me.
From Let It Be, 1970.
Sure, yeah.
Totally different, very cool little part, but that I mixed with Marvin Gaye, played by a synth pop new wave band, suddenly we get True by Spandau Ballet.
I love it.
So I really want to dial into that soul influence, that
yes.
Marvin Gaye, that Al Green, and talk about how it comes together in this way that amplifies the emotionality of this distant, unrequited love of this song that makes it so perfect for an awkward middle school dance.
Mm.
Have I already said on this podcast that I definitely did not go to any middle school game?
You didn't?
I did not get to go. I did not subject myself to the social awkwardness.
You were like too cool.
I was not cool enough is what I would say. I was not cool
Mark.
Enough. Only the cool. I think there's a universality, a ubiquitousness of a high school dance that
yeah.
does not extend to a middle school dance. Only the coolest kids or the least cool, possibly. I was in that uncanny valley where I was uncool, but not uncool enough to still go.
We never had like middle school dances, but we had like boy girl parties. So it was like a big thing to have a quote boy girl party, like in like fifth or sixth grade. And we'd like dance in living rooms, like
I think
Whitney
that's a
Houston
dance, yeah.
and like.
So, okay.
The
so
song from Aladdin.
I want to talk about how this song has such rich harmonies, the rich chord progression, and how they're reinforced by the sort of money notes of
okay.
this vocal melody.
Cool.
And that the two create this tension that's this beautiful, rich emotionality that just makes this song so saccharine but so satisfying. Let me play for you the intro. Those synth chords are playing things called seventh chords and ninth chords. Do those terms mean anything to you, Nicole?
My best guess is that seventh and ninth chords are rooted in the seventh and ninth note of the scale of whatever key the song's in. Is that right?
So this is what my students hate about music theory is that sounds right, right?
It makes sense that that would be it.
That, what you just said,
yeah.
the chords based on the seven and the nine,
yeah.
I would call that a seven chord. Not a seventh chord.
Oh, Mark.
You would say a nine, although a two it would be. Not a ninth. This is why people hate music theory, because there's little differences are make all the difference. So,
it doesn't
okay.
make it make sense.
I'm going to make it make sense.
Okay.
And this is part of why this song is so cool. So let's start with just a triad. This is what we call a triad in music. The simplest chord you'll ever hear.
Three, five, seven.
One, three, five.
Oh, this is gonna
go that
way.
I played a little scale, right? You heard a G scale. This song's in G. One, two, three, four, five. But I skipped the two and the four. If we play the one, the three, and the five together, we get a chord called a triad. Three notes. Each of them is two notes apart. So we call that a third. So they're each a third apart.
Okay.
A triad. Listen again. Lovely. But if I keep going and I go up another third, five, six, seven. So one, three, five, seven, we get what's called a seventh chord.
Oh.
More crunchy.
That sounds like the song.
Starting to sound like the song. What if we keep going? Seven, eight, nine.
Yeah.
Should I keep going? You can go to 11th. You can go
what?
To 13th. If you
Let's
go to 13th, you're playing every note in the scale.
How lovely.
Lovely, but you usually don't see all those notes together.
No.
It's just a lot of sound, right?
How do you even play that on a piano? You don't have 13 fingers.
You only need seven, though.
Oh,
one,
cool.
three, five, seven, nine,
I
11, 13.
Yeah, that works.
Some people, by the way, might have 13 fingers.
Sure.
I think it's rude of you to presume
Sorry.
Too much.
Shout out.
Okay.
Oh, oh, oh.
Check Engine Light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So where am I going with this? We call these cord extensions. Sometimes people call them tall chords. These are extended harmonies that basically are just jazzier, richer. And you can go from this intro here. Here's what this sounds like if I play it just with triads. 1, 3, 5. No colorful notes on top.
Sounds boring.
Boring.
Mm-hmm.
Add the sevenths and the ninths.
It's like Magic Under the Stars.
Magic Under the Stars. That's exactly like the title of an eighth grade dance.
Yeah.
If I was a principal at an eighth grade dance, especially in 1983, Magic Under the Stars would be what I'd call it.
We got it.
Okay. So anyways, where are we going here? I mentioned how the vocal line, that iconic part, I'm not going to do it, but the connects to the juiciness of this. Listen once again, and I want you to listen to the highest note he sings. The top note, let's call that the money note, right?
It's
so beautiful.
Yeah.
It's breathy. It's breathless. It's amazing. It's the ninth of the chord. Take a listen. So it's this E minor chord, and that's the ninth of it. It's not just a note. It's the crunchiest note you could choose, and it's just so expressive, so soulful. And then on I Know This Much Is, we get C major 9. He's singing the ninth. And probably my favorite part of the song is when he sings, "This is the sound of my soul." On the word sound, he's singing the ninth of a chord.
This is the sound of my soul. This is the sound.
Yeah, the money notes of this song, the most emotionally powerful notes, are not just random notes. They happen to be the most unusual and interesting part of these really rich chords. Not the root, not the third, but the ninth, the seventh. Sometimes possibly other things. What do you think?
Kind of, it feels like it's unexpected and kind of like existential. Like you're not used to seeing that level of progression, maybe. And then like when he hits that ninth note, it's like, what an unexpected lift. It like brings up everything up with it.
Well, speaking about lift, there's this point when he jumps up to a high note and he jumps up to the highest and loudest note he's sung at this point in the song. And he's on the ninth of an F major 9 chord. Take a listen.
Why do I find it hard to write the next line? Oh, I want the truth to be said.
And so we get. So beautiful, right?
It is.
That chord is beautiful, but so is the melody note because of how it interacts with the chord.
And like the build up to that note adds, like, you know, he's going to get there. You know, he like builds up to it. It creates like this. It's not a tension, but it creates like an expectation.
I would say it definitely is a tension. Yeah. I don't know that that's the effect we feel, but the effect we do feel, this sort of emotional yearning or whatever, is caused by the musical tension of these two things interacting. And remember his influences. Listen to what he says here.
Listening to
All Night Long.
Listening to Marvin All Night Long. And Marvin, of course, is one of songwriter Gary Kemp's key influences. And just so you know, that high falsetto backing vocal All Night Long, seventh of a minor 7 chord. But let's give some examples of this being used in other music. And of course, we've got to talk about Marvin Gaye. So 1971, major, major piece of music. What's going on?
To bring some loving here today, Father, Father, we don't.
So good.
What's the money note of that line?
The highest note is here. Yeah. And then he goes
loving
down.
Yeah. Both of those notes are they're the same. That note, guess what? Kind of a crunchy note.
Checks notes. It's the seventh.
It's the seventh.
It's the seventh
of an
everybody.
A major seven chord. And then when he goes, Father, Father, I obviously can't do it justice. That's the sixth of a chord, which is another crunchy variety. And we keep going down his influences. We're going to see something similar with Al Green's hit, Let's Stay Together, also 1971.
I'm so in love with you.
What's the money note?
Probably the seventh again,
love.
Right? Yeah.
Ninth. And then he goes, with you, which is the seventh, right? So he's hitting all these crunchy, beautiful notes. And then there's even more of them later on this high note. Once again, he's the seventh. And this doesn't just stop in the 70s and the 80s. We have way newer examples, including Charlie Puth, the song Attention from 2017.
That's a great song.
Charlie Puth, lots of money notes, lots of high falsetto hits. These last two notes are the seventh of two different chords. Both of the high notes are each the seventh of a different chord.
Ooh, and now I'm all upon you, what you expect, but you're not coming home with me tonight. You just want attention.
So that you're just coming home with me tonight, those notes with all that reverb swimming around it sit at the seventh of a minor seven and a major seven chord. So these emotional, in this case, a new song, and in some of the other cases, a not new song, these emotional moments are powered by these glorious melody notes, usually high notes, that often are going to be a dissonant or crunchy part of a complicated chord. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking about, you know, the complicated chords here that you're referencing, and all the songs that you're playing are like, to me, they're all like love songs in some way. But they're all like referencing different stages of love in my mind. Mm. And I'm like really thinking a lot about the simplicity of the Spandau Ballet song True, and how it is like very pure and does feel like young love. And then you get into some of the Al Green songs that are using that same convention and talking about love, but in like a more nuanced way. Hmm. And I'm really thinking a lot about the different styles of love. That's where my mind's going when you're talking about all this. I'm thinking about the grittiness of different styles of love. I know that's a weird stretch.
Well, and Attention, Charlie Puth. I mean, that's either regret or rejection or an ex. There's something about that that's very unsatisfied, right?
Right.
Looking at someone from afar in the same way maybe that the character in True is looking at this woman he's obsessed with from afar, but there's potential there, whereas
yes.
Charlie Puth's tune is about, you know, the disillusion of that tension. But all of them have the same emotional,
it's like
sonics.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's yearning. I think yearning, and I think anybody who's listened to Marvin Gaye and Al Green knows that you can feel yearning listening to that
like
music.
That's what you're doing.
And it's not just through lyrics. It's not just through those vocalists having, I mean, all of the vocalists we've heard today are tremendous, but there's something to the composition that's giving us that extra spice that you maybe don't need because it's flavorful on its own, but it helps make it all the more powerful.
I'm thinking about like the different specific stages of love, including like this infatuation stage that I think True is referencing that like,
yeah.
And why young love specifically, I'm going back to that middle school dance, that feeling of even just a boy or girl or person that you like holding your hand for the first time, like how that can make you feel like dangerous and unsettled, even like physiologically sick, right? And like everything that's happening in a young person's brain chemistry in those moments. It's just really interesting to me because the music makes us feel that way. The music makes us feel this like oxytocin expression, which is the neurotransmitter that gives us the feeling of love and secure attachment, or even like vasopressin, which is the neurotransmitter that makes us like want to fight for love and like throw down and throw punches if someone's like coming after our partner. That is a pure human experience. And I think these songs reference it like really well. But I think a lot about first loves and this idea of falling in love and the levels of dopamine that come out in your brain when you're first falling in love and like the thrill of the hunt, which is gross, but like that's what it is, like that reward when you finally get what you've been chasing.
But this song isn't there, right? This song doesn't get there yet. And I think that notion of the lovesickness, I mean, there's a weirdly, to me, not knowing really how any of this works, there's a weird similarity between the sick feeling you get if you're like kind of infatuated with someone, especially when you're in middle school or high school, to post-breakup. There's something about this, the sick, the weird physicality of that.
Yeah.
That isn't there when a relationship is stable and requited and stable and like predictable. I can remember just laying in bed trying to sleep just with butterflies when I was in high school. If I was like had a really strong crush on somebody and it made me super nervous to even think about it, but you kind of can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
That's a palpable feeling. And I don't know that these songs, these chords and these melodies are generating that feeling, but there's something relatable about that tension in this early stage of a possible relationship that maybe doesn't even ever exist.
Yeah, there's a physiological reaction to love that feels like anxiety, right? It feels your palms get sweaty, your heart beats fast, your nervous system's going crazy because in your brain, it's sending all these chemical signals to like be alert and be on guard because anything could happen next. And it depends on how you interpret those signals sociologically of how it actually makes you feel. And there have been cases of people like dying from heartbreak, of people become physically sick and having like cardiac challenges and cardiac pathology due to breakups. It is possible to die of heartbreak, for sure.
Just because the chemicals go haywire, basically?
Yeah, that's part of it. But also there's something in your body called the allostatic load, which is like your immune system's. It's kind of like, you know, when you're really stressed out and things pile up on you, you might get a cold and you might get sick.
Yeah.
Like stress makes you sick.
Sure.
The slow buildup of tension and stress and cortisol and other things in your endocrine system and neurotransmission system build up and break down your nervous system and make you sick. And you could relate that to like heartbreak, like the stress of a breakup could make you physically ill. It's really fascinating how our bodies are wired biologically towards love and towards connection.
Yeah. But there's kind of a discomfort in that, right?
Yeah.
Even when things in this song, there isn't a negative side yet, but it still has a little bit of that boiling in it. And that's why it makes you, most of the times you've heard this song throughout your life, have not been at a middle school dance, but it still evokes that, even though you may have never actually danced it at a middle school dance.
No,
there's
it gives me that feeling. Yeah, something about it. And also, you know, it's really interesting because a lot of these feelings that we feel like of the chase and this like infatuation, love, really insanely passionate love, it changes as you get older. These feelings, like we're thinking like Romeo and Juliet feelings, like they were 16, 18 years old.
If that.
I mean, some people say Romeo was much older, but we don't have to talk about that. But you wouldn't see adults behaving that way. It just wouldn't happen because when kids are in that age, when we're talking about this dopamine, this like reward for the chase, as adults, our dopamine system is more regulated and more solidified than it was when we were teenagers. So that's why teenagers are like kind of crazy in love. And you're not seeing like a 50-year-old crazy in love unless you're Beyonce.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't 50 when that song came out.
No, she wasn't. That is a
great song. But nor was she a teen anymore. Okay. All right. So two important questions.
Sure.
Claire Grogan.
Yeah. What
happened
to her?
The lead singer of Altered Images. I don't know what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully she's still making great music. Have you ever had a song written about you?
Great question.
I'm not going to ask you, have you written a song about? I'm going to, have you been the subject of a song?
I don't know if I have. Not to my knowledge. I'm going back. There was a period of time that there were musicians in the mix. There were bike couriers in the mix that wrote music. And I feel like they were musical enough that they could have written a song about me, but it was never shared with me.
It was never shared
with
you.
No, not to my knowledge.
This song was most certainly known by Miss Grogan when it came out.
What did she think about
it? I don't know. I think I should have looked that up. But
I wonder.
But yeah, so I was wondering. I have had a song written about
me. Okay.
It was a angry band breaking up song. My high school band broke up and the new band, the drummer and the bass player started. And I didn't know that I was the epicenter of the band breakup. I did not know at the time
the song
that it was my fault until they had a song and they left the band. The band didn't break up. They left the band. The band eventually broke up. And they wrote an angry song about how I ruined everything. I do not remember the name of it.
No, I was like, if you have the clip of that, I would pay money to
hear it. I could probably find it.
Yes, we'll have to.
But I have an angry, like a 16-year-old kid wrote a song about how I broke up their band that they voluntarily quit. Hi, everyone. Mark here with a little post-recording insert. I do have it. I found it. This is the unsigned, unknown San Diego band Common Plight with their song that, as far as I can tell, is an angry song about me called Problems Over. Shout out to Danny and Paul. Haven't seen you guys in a long time. Let's talk about it. Let's grab a beer. It's not too late to make amends.
So, no one's angstier than a 16-year-old.
No one's angstier than... Is this phrase, hell hath no fury, like a drummer scorned? A teenage drummer scorned? I think that's what it is.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that often.
Can you think of any other songs where the most famous part doesn't even have words? Just... Aside from the Beatles' Dig a Pony. What do you got? Any other ones?
Any other songs that the most famous parts... don't have words.
I don't mean like a guitar part. I mean like a vocal hook.
A vocal hook. I can't. What do you have?
Oh, I got some.
I bet. Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Tom's Diner, Suzanne Vega.
Yeah.
How about...
Yeah.
I'm not saying it right, but Crash Test Dummies.
Mbop.
Mbop. Hanson. That's a good one. Yeah, I didn't get that one.
Very into Jesus.
Very into... Is that what Mbop refers to?
I think.
I don't know. Hi, everybody. Mark here again for a little post-show edition. Let me just play you this bit at the end of True. Okay, and now let's listen to the hit Backstreet Boys cover. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a thought. Tell me why it ain't nothing but a mistake. Tell me why. Come on, listen again. I make no accusations, I just ask questions. Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Vatcher and me, Mark Papany. I also produce. Please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating and a review.
And let us know what you think on social media. We're Never Music Pod on all major platforms. You can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Every so often we'll do a mailbag episode where we answer all your burning questions, so please send them in. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, David here. Severance is back. The Lorehounds are partnering with Properly Howard to bring you in-depth weekly coverage of season 2. Join me, John, Anthony, and Steve as we unpack every twist, theory, and revelation. We've created a dedicated feed just for our Severance coverage. Simply search for Severance Lorehounds in your podcast app, or find the direct link in our link tree. Our weekly episodes dig deep into the show's mysteries, themes, and bigger questions about identity and consciousness that make Severance so compelling. Season Pass and regular community subscribers get ad-free access to our weekly episodes, plus exclusive content like our Supply Closet bonus series, featuring fascinating conversations with experts like the team from Nevermind the Music, We've explored the neuroscience of memory and personality, decoded the hidden meanings in the show's musical themes, and there's much more to come. You'll also get Steve and Anthony's complete season one rewatch series. We believe in total transparency with our listeners. And unlike mammalians nurturable, we're happy to share all of our secrets. Find the link for the Severance feed in the show notes below, or search Severance Lorehounds wherever you get your podcasts. Come theorize with us about what's really happening at Lumen.
And remember, the episode you think you're about to hear is merely a reflection of the episode that thinks it's about to be heard.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.